don't care. I don't care about spelling. I don't care about grammar. It's no concern with me.
Yeah. So I feel like that helped that I didn't have to like really pay attention to like what I'm writing.
Yeah.
As long as it's like somewhat like you know what I'm saying, but
it would have been the same as if you were in class. I gave you 75 minutes. I gave you the whole class time. Okay. Was it hard?
I felt rushed too.
Did you?
But I'm
but again, like, it's that
I'm not like you guys where I can just type. It's you know, being an old person that I am, it's habit to like know that like my husband gets mad at me because I click back. Like if I mistype a word, I erase everything and go back to that word and correct it. It's just my Pavlovian habits of making things correct.
Okay.
Because
right.
I mean, you know, that's
right.
How it was in school.
Well, see, my take is that if you were writing it all out on paper, and again, the clock is ticking, how much time do you have to erase it all?
Yeah.
You don't have that much.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why I don't penalize you for it. Was there anything that was a surprise? Any of the subject points? I tried covering everything we covered. Did anyone run out of time completely?
Yes.
Wasn't able to finish the exam. How much did you have left?
I had two questions left. I was on
multiple choice, or
I didn't get to them.
Okay.
It was like I got to that, like it stopped me on. I was doing the long answer,
yeah.
The second one, and then there was two questions left after that. So it just shut me out and went. And I said, okay.
Okay.
That's what it is.
But everyone else managed to get it in under the wire. Mm-hmm. Okay. I haven't looked at it because this new system upgrade that they put in Blackboard, it's just a pain in my tuchus. Obviously. You know, thank you for everyone who sent me the emails. Of course, when they first started coming, we're in down in Washington, D.C., and I'm on a bus. And we're going to all the monuments. And I'm only getting the ones because the people who sent them to my personal email. But I know when I got back to the hotel at like 6, and I log in and I see all the people who sent it to me through Blackboard and sent to my school email, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, they're going to hate me. They're going to want to stab me when I show up to class. So, again, I appreciate your willingness. Yeah, there was a weird upgrade that I wasn't available. I did not know. And I actually had to go in and click one little click box. We've never had to do that before, ever. So, and of course, they don't tell us. But somebody, I don't remember who it was, said that IT said there's something I had to do.
Oh, it was me.
Yeah, you were the one who was talking to IT?
Yeah.
Well, thank God, whoever it was you were telling said that to you, because what do you think the first thing I did was? Then I started going doing the deep dive through all of the different settings and all the rest. Because the worst part is, I don't see what you see. I see the backside of it. I can't see the front side of it. So it's just kind of annoying.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone else, but for me, after you send me the videos, I tried again, like, separate. Like, those ones worked for me, but it was just completely black. Like, there was, like, no...
You couldn't see me?
No, unless after you sent me the other link again, I could.
Oh yeah, did anyone have a hard time finding the getting the videos?
I did. Well, that's why I asked you where they were.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't know where they were. You sent the email,
yeah.
Right? And I thought that they weren't going to be in the same box as what you said for next week, so I had trouble finding them.
Oh, I figured, again, this is stupid, because again, I made the hyperlink, and I figured most people would understand that that's the hyperlink, and then I click on it, and I work. So I apologize.
No,
lesson
yeah,
learned.
Just for me, just, like I would say, like send another email with both of the links again, so people would know, like, okay, this is what class, what we have to do for more nights.
Yep. All right.
Just an idea.
No, I appreciate it. Again, it was kind of a whirlwind. You know, obviously, I've never had to miss a whole week like I had to do with you guys. And even if I do miss a day, it's usually snow related. So guess where I am if it's snow related? You know, I'm in my office or in my house. I can make the corrections. This was just kind of like, try to remember everything I can remember. Throw it all out at once and hope and pray that it all works out. But if you were able to get everything done, I appreciate it. But again, I promise you, I'm only going to do it to you one more time this semester. But it won't be for a full year. Because I'm going to have to go out again in May. That there should be nothing else that's going to interfere with our time together, at least for the next month and a half. And then we get spring break coming up, too. That'll be nice. I won't make you do any work over spring break. Of course, you won't. How many people watched both videos? Okay, How many people remember to do the quiz yesterday? On Friday? What? Wait, oh, what? What? There was a quiz.
I was in New Hampshire.
You didn't take the test.
Test?
Did you take the exam?
I took the exam.
You took the exam? Yeah. All right. I thought I saw
the quiz.
All right, you didn't take the quiz. All right. So, again, I'm a fair guy. For everyone who took it like you were supposed to, I'm going to count it 10 times as much as worth. No, that wouldn't be fair. If you missed it, I will send out another, and I'll give you another chance to do it.
The quiz or
the quiz? Okay. The quiz. As far as the exams go, you will get access to them. There's just one person that's like, again, I don't want to. They're not here, so I can talk about it and give you little details. They're giving me the line that what they have isn't working, and they had to go out and buy a new one, and then they're having issues. They can't, like, set it up, and it's just like excuse, excuse, excuse. But there is a point when eventually I say, I've sent you 12 messages. We're trying to get you to take it. Because the rest of the class cannot see anything I grade until I put a grade in for everybody. So the only way for me to get around that is to give this person a zero. And so there's basically we're waiting on one. So as soon as that person can figure out their stuff, you know, everything should open and you should go back and be able to see how you did. All right. I asked you to do homework for today. I also told you we were going to do a quiz. I'm not going to do either because I want to give you another day to take a step back and regroup. And I'm only doing that based on the fact that only 8 people took the quiz. See, I even know how many people took the quiz. That was kind of like a trick question. Yes?
Can I ask a question? So based on listening to the things, I'm just curious because you kept saying criminal justice majors. I'm not a criminal justice major, and my kid who is a criminal justice major doesn't have to take this course, so I'm not understanding, like, where that, like, the stuff that you're kind of saying is, oh, you should know this because you're a criminal justice major. I'm like, yeah, I'm not. I'm a business major.
No. There are students in this class that are criminal justice majors, and so this, I'm not saying they have to take this class, but it should be redundant or they should have heard this before.
Okay. Because I'm not criminal justice. I don't know what you're
speaking in
about.
Terms of familiarity. Remember, we have 23 people that are registered in this class, and everyone has different majors, and there's about 5 that are in the criminal justice department. So for them, this is just kind of like easy review. Well, at least this section, the criminal law, the civil stuff, forget about it. Those criminal justice people don't understand civil law, the criminal side of things, because of crime. Crime is a crime is a crime, right? What is a crime? What do you got?
Crime is anything that offends against the sovereign power, like the government or the state.
All right. So it's crime is an offense against the sovereign power. What do you mean by that?
Like the state, like you're breaking the law. Like
okay.
The government.
So, basically, sorry, I'm trying to remember. This is where I left off, right? I think I did this one. So, basically, what you're saying is someone said you can or cannot do something, and if it's something they said you cannot do, then you decide to do it. That's going to get you in trouble?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you do it accidentally? Can you accidentally commit a crime?
Yes.
You can accidentally commit a crime?
Oh, it's happened to me.
All right.
I had uncles. We were in Florida. And it was my husband's family. They thought it was funny that they told me that we were at one of those, like, Rainforest Cafe kind of places. And they told me, you just take the glass, take the glass. We get it because we paid for it. Not knowing that they had already given them glasses and put it in there, so I walked out with the glass. So technically, I stole the glass. I didn't know I was stealing the glass.
But
an accident.
But here's the thing. That's not what I mean. You actually engaged in an intentional act.
No, because the glass was included in the price.
But you meant to take the glass.
Because it was paid for.
I understand that.
But I didn't know that they don't take the ones off the table.
I understand that.
So therefore, they're the ones who are...
These are how crimes work. It's not necessarily all of the specific things that are involved. It's the initial action that results in the crime. So, in your instance, yeah, you didn't know, but you still did that intentional taking of something that did not belong to you.
But it did, because they were told. We were told that it was so coming from the outside, and this is why it was. This is why I consider it accidental. They thought it would be funny to have me walk out with it because I knew that the price of this stupid drink is $30 or whatever, but you get the glass, so they're like, oh, we forgot our glass. Grab it.
So you were bamboozled?
Yes. By a police officer. Go figure.
Oh. You know what that's called? Mm. If he was actually on active duty? That's entrapment. Which they cannot do.
He wasn't. He was in Florida, so.
I got you. Well, here's the thing. Just like that, how do you prove a crime? Well, it begins with that notion of an intentional action. How do you prove that someone meant to do the act that resulted in all of the dominoes falling that culminated in an act that the government said, you shall not do? How do you prove it? Does anybody know? Does anybody know? Nobody knows? I'm trying to figure out where the heck I am in here. Torts there, can help me? Where's the crimes? That's agency. No, we're not there. There we go. Crimes. Crimes. You have to work really hard. Because if you cannot, if you're the government, if you cannot show that the person meant to do the act that resulted in the crime, there can be no conviction of guilt. So, how do you do that? Well, simple. The government must gather enough evidence. What's the burden of proof for a criminal crime? What's the burden of proof for a crime?
Beyond a reasonable doubt.
So you have to gather enough evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that, first, what is known as actus reus occurred. Actus reus. Anyone experts in Latin? Actus reus. This is the criminal act. So in order to establish that a crime has committed, they work backwards. First, they prove that someone did something that was actually illegal. So, in our hypothetical stolen glass case, did Heidi actually have the glass in her possession once she left the property? Apparently so. So that would be the first step, that she actually had it. Okay? Part two, and this is the challenge. And this is where Heidi would be acquitted. Did you steal the glass? Yes. But did you mentally make that decision, knowing everything available? Did you know what you were doing was wrong? Obviously not. She thought she was following the rules. She didn't know that her party played shenanigans on her. So as a result, could she be convicted? No. Mens rea is the guilty mind. The guilty mind. Defendant must not have only done the act, but they must have meant to do the act. Question so far. Well, how the heck do you do this? Well, again, the law has been in place for many, many, many centuries, and the law has figured it out. How do you prove someone meant to commit a crime? Well, there's actually four ways. There are four ways. The first is proving what's known as general intent. General intent. Meaning, the defendant intended to do the criminal act. Defendant meant to do the criminal act. Trying to think. I haven't done this yet. Oh, you know why I haven't done this yet? Because I usually talk about it in torts, and I usually do torts before I do crimes, but for some reason I decided to do crimes first. What is battery? The crime of battery. Anybody know?
You physically attack someone?
Well, does it have to be attack?
Probably.
But there's a physical act involved, and it involves another person. From a legal perspective, battery is the unwanted touching of another. That's all it is. So someone wanted to come up and touch you. How could you prove that somebody wanted to come up and touch you?
Did they touch you?
No. We've established that there was a touching. But how do you prove that they wanted to come up and touch you?
Their guilty mind? Like the mens rea thing?
Well, no. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to show how would you prove that there was somebody that wanted to touch you?
Physically came over and did it. So he thought about it before he did it.
Walked up, clenched a fist, did one of these, and then did that. Could you mean to do anything else if you go through those motions? Okay. Compare that to walking through a crowded hall like you did in high school. And teenage kids in particular in this day and age, your face is probably buried in your phone, or maybe you're just kind of walking down the hall, and the next thing you know, bam, you smash into somebody. Is that a battery? Well, was it a touching of another? But did you mean to do it? There's a difference. Intent, general intent, involves not only the fist to the face, but you have to be able to show they meant to do it. That's general intent. Question? Questions? By the way, there's a lot of confusion with this, and I'm going to throw it out now, even though I'm going to talk more about it in torts. What's an assault? What's an assault versus a battery? Anybody know?
Like hurting somebody?
That's the battery. The battery is the touching of another. What's an assault?
Is it like attacking?
No.
Is it the threat?
It's the threat. One of the biggest problems that we have in our society is that people have a tendency to, and I'm not trying to be offensive, but they try to dumb things down. And oftentimes they overlap the phrases. But from a legal perspective, an assault is a crime. Battery is a crime. An assault is when you, well, to put lack of a better way, it's that oh shit moment. So you see someone wind up, you know the punch is coming. And that's the assault. It's that threat of imminent touching. But the battery is the actual crime. So, not every battery has an assault. And not every assault is a battery. So it's illegal to walk up to somebody and take a swing at their face and stop at the last second. Because that's a crime. You just made a reasonable person sit back and think, ah! There's your crime. Even though no touching occurred.
Wait, so how can there be, battery without assault?
What happens if I walk up behind you and punch you in the back of the head? Did you see it coming? Did you catch that? I'm foreshadowing. Subtle hint. If you haven't figured it out, if I mention a weird example in class, you might see it again. It's kind of same.
All right.
General intent is when you're going through the act itself.
Specific intent is a little different. General intent means you meant to do the crime itself. Specific intent is intent that goes beyond the crime. It goes beyond the crime. It goes beyond the physical act. So, crime.
Burglary. What is the crime of burglary? No. What is the crime of burglary? No. See what I mean? It's not your fault. It's not your fault. Burglary is the criminal act of breaking into somewhere where you don't belong with the intent to steal. If you break into Papa Gino's in the middle of the night, and you break in, because you decide, you hear about it in the news every now and then, oh, I'm going to be clever, I'm going to jump on the roof, and I'm going to go through their air vent. But when you go through the air vent, you fall through, you break your leg, and you land there floundering, you didn't actually steal anything, but you committed an act of burglary. And because you got a broken leg, you can't get away. When the staff shows up, they're going to see you on the floor. They're going to call the cops. You're going to take a nice ride in the paddy wagon.
That's burglary. Theft. That's the taking of someone else's property. So for burglary, you don't have to necessarily show that they actually took anything. Because the intent involves them, or why else would they go in? Kind of. Why else would they break into someone else's building? Unless they were looking to steal. You know, I can't imagine someone would break into my house to, mop my floors. I'd appreciate it. But chances are, if they're going to break in my house, they're going to go through my stuff and take whatever they think is valuable. So, specific intent. They're doing the act of breaking in. They want to break in to do something more. And by the way, if they actually do something more, you can add on additional crimes.
Questions?
All right, what about this one?
Any of you have ever, under proper supervision and proper training, handled a firearm? Okay? Obviously, we know what a gun is. We also know the lethality that a gun can result in. Because after all, the purpose of a gun is to render some type of physical destruction to someone or something. Well, let's imagine, if you will, I decide one day to bring in one of my guns to class. And then I decide I'm going to show off because I think I'm a big, tough guy because I got a gun. And I'm going to go and start doing all the old cowboy western. Well, I'm going to put the gun in my holster. I'm going to pull it out real quick and I'm going to spin it around, through the trigger guard. And in doing so, boom, bullet comes out and kills you. Did I mean to do that? Did I mean to kill him? No, 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 not at all. But did I do something very dumb? Oh, yes, I did. Because another way to prove intent is if you do something that is so horrendously reckless, something that is hyper negligent,
you can be convicted of a crime.
Because I didn't mean for the bullet to go off, and I definitely didn't mean for him to die, but he did. So how would the state prove it? Eyewitness testimony of me showing off that I had a gun and what I was doing in the seconds before the gun went bang.
Questions? And here is the last way. And by the way, this one is relevant if you ever are going to become a business owner. The last way is what's known as strict liability. One of the cases on the criminal section. By the way, I'm going to skip the ethics. I got to go clean that up. I'm going to skip over the ethics. We're going to bring up the crime one. There's actually a case in here that involves what's called strict liability.
Strict liability is what the legislature, the government uses to basically establish punishments directly for criminal acts. If you are held to be strictly liable, all the government needs to show is that you did whatever it was. The reason why you did it is not relevant. So for instance, if you become a member because of eligibility or for service, a member of an American Legion post, American Legion family, we do lots of good things, although I've yet to see my name get pulled on the Sunday videos, just kind of saying. But we do a lot of good work. But many of the posts also have a bar. All right? If any of the bartenders do not pay attention to the amount of alcohol that they give to their customers, and that customer gets into a car and kills somebody, that bartender and that facility is strictly liable. Because our state statutes, our law in the state, says it's illegal for bars, any establishment that serves alcohol, to over-serve. So, can the bartender turn around and say, well, it was a real busy night? Or can the bartender turn around and say, well, I didn't think he or she was that drunk. They looked fine to me. No. It's simply, did they have six drinks at this establishment? Yes or no? Yes? You're responsible.
I didn't know that was a thing, because you go to the bar and you see all these people
I know.
So drunk.
I know.
So they're technically still breaking the law.
Yes. Same thing with social housed as well. So if you are not an adult yet, over the age of 21, and you decide to have a keg party, and bring all your young friends over, and something happens to any of those kids, mom and dad are going to lose their house. Because they are responsible. Doesn't matter if mom and dad got the alcohol. Doesn't even matter if mom and dad even knew the kids were having a party in the house. The fact that minors consumed alcohol on property means that the parents, the social host, is strictly liable for all of the bad things that happened.
There was a bar in Worcester that happened to 2020, right before COVID.
Yeah.
It happened the night before Thanksgiving in 2019. The person had been going around, was served at the Blarney Stone. They have it on camera. He went and then killed somebody on Chandler Street, took somebody out. And then the bar isn't even open anymore because they were found liable.
Yeah, yeah. It happens.
For just them having one drink in the bar, they were already... They didn't account for they go to the last establishment that they were at.
Yep. Because that last bartender should have been able to judge when the person went up to the bar that they should not be having another one. How would that impact if you didn't have a liquor drinking establishment? Well, say you had a home, a hardware store. How old do you have to be to buy certain glues, certain spray paints?
18.
Yeah, well, if a 16-year-old is, even they're like, well, I'm going to be doing a model for school and I just want to buy some spray paint. If that store lets that kid walk out with spray paint and the kid decides to do an upside down, what do they call it, whippets or something like that, and dies, store's liable. Why?
Because the law established automatic guilt. Did they sell? Yes? Done. Questions? I'm not trying to scare the bejeebus out of you. But remember, we live in a really big, complicated world. And if you are going to run a business, understand that you will be responsible for the actions of not only what you do, but all of your employees. All right. Well, here's an interesting curveball. What happens if the person convicted of the crime doesn't understand the reality of the situation? Doesn't understand the difference between right and wrong? By the way, legally speaking, that's called lack of capacity. So, quick side note. I don't do anything flashy law, or I've told you that. I just do real estate closings. I literally watch people sign papers. It's so great because I have no liability. I got nothing to worry about. Did you sign the paper or not? But one of the questions I do have to ask is, are you currently suffering from any type of legal disabilities at this moment that's going to impede or impair any aspect of this contract? In an indirect way, I am literally asking them, are you shit-faced? Because if you are too intoxicated, you lack mental capacity. You cannot make a valid contract. We can understand there are times when people have a little bit of too much of this, or too much of this or that or whatever you crazy kids do this day and age. And it causes our minds not quite to be in the right place. Well, if you can barely walk a straight line, are you going to know the difference in every action you take between right and wrong? Or what happens if it's more than you in getting intoxicated in the moment, what happens if you actually have a medical condition? There are so many psychiatric conditions out there that people do not walk constantly in a state of reality. Can you be convicted of a crime? Maybe. The answer is maybe. There are, for every cause, defenses. We're going to start doing some of the crimes and some of the defenses. But the biggest defense to mens rea, and by the way, you cannot be convicted of a crime unless the state can prove both. The one way criminal defense attorneys get people off is not by attacking the criminal act, but going after mens rea. And one of the rules that have been established is known as the McNaughton Rule. Under the McNaughton Rule, the defendant is too mentally unbalanced to know right from wrong. The McNaughton Rule. The defendant is too mentally unbalanced. I'm trying to be politically correct. And actually, I should be a little more precise. Mentally unbalanced in the moment to know right from wrong. How do you prove somebody was not in the right mind at the moment a crime was committed? How do you do it?
In the moment, or
so you're in trial. You know, the state is providing all this evidence. How would the defense counter any evidence that would establish mental state?
Could they get like the doctor's order?
More this than that. You would start off by asking people who were friends with them, how are they? But you would seal the deal by getting a licensed psychiatrist who would sit there and do an evaluation. And the McNaughton Rule would be triggered if a psychiatric expert gets on the stand and testifies, look, defendant doesn't know what day of the week it is, let alone the consequences of the actions that they took. if you watch the courtroom dramas, and it's something dealing with like a big crime boss, where did their attorney end up getting them sent? You know, it's not frequently to the clink. Usually it's to a hospital where they can get psychological evaluations. It's all part of the game. It's all part of the strategy. Because if it can be established that they don't know what they were doing, this is going to be harsh. Then they cannot be found guilty. I got an example for you. 1993 case. Bieber v. People. This came out of the Supreme Court in Colorado. Here are the facts. Real case, by the way. I know they're not grammatically correct sentences. I just try to jot them down. Obviously, it's not attention deficit disorder. Amphetamine delusional disorder. Everyone get through it? Mm-hmm. What? Well, you're raising your hand. I'm assuming you do.
I don't think he is legally insane.
Why not?
Because he had a long term of his drug abuse since he was a teenager, and at the time he was not on drugs. And the way I see it is that he wasn't something that, like, he was born with. Like, he put himself in that predicament of doing drugs that caused the issues. The drugs are also illegal. So he kind of did it to himself. And at the time he knew that he wasn't on drugs.
Oh, wow, you would never make a good criminal defense attorney. He did it all to himself. He meant to do it. Wow, that's harsh. Anyone else? Any of you? Yep, go ahead.
I think he can be legal insane even if he doesn't have a disorder. Or that specific disorder. And he can be legally insane even if he wasn't on drugs at the time, but because of his past, he could be insane, which could lead him to making poor decisions.
Oh, I have a feeling we're going to throw down. So, right? Yeah, maybe. Whereas, put him in Old Sparky. Wow, harsh. Okay, all right. Anyone else? Now again, we can have fun with this because that's what we're supposed to do. As I told you on day one, life's too short to be serious all the time. But if you are in a home or you know somebody that has substance abuse over the years, it does definitely change the way you function because it restructures your brain. And the longer you do that kind of stuff, the more damages it does. So, case in point, one of the reasons why President Trump issued an executive order to shift the statutory regulations around cannabis use is to allow the government to actually start conducting studies. Because there is circumstantial evidence that shows if you use pot too young
And for too long, you will end up with, I don't want to say brain damage, but we will say a damaged brain. Because your brain is going to continue to develop and grow and mature all the way into your late 20s. So if this kid had been doing drugs from the time he was a teenager, think about how his brain was rewired. Is it possible that in the moment, yeah, he might not have been high, but he had a flashback. His brain saw something that triggered the dopamine effects like you do when you do the drugs, and he was in a state of delusion.
So he was a kid?
No, he was an adult. He was an adult. He was not actually a prisoner of war, though.
That was my next question.
But he believed he was. He believed he was actually in Vietnam, but he never went. Complicated, right? Complicated. This is not easy. What do you think?
I'm just shaking my head right now because I know that you say it's real, but it was such a different time back then that it's like first of all, if he said he was a POW, back then there was such a stigma around Vietnam vets. It was still a stigma. It's not 100%. Anymore, but it was a stigma that it was like even if there weren't true Vietnam vets that if somebody said they were, they took them for their word for that.
Right.
So, it just one of these things that, but it was like the drug abuse, like, to me, it's like, how old is this person? Because that ties into how I look at it.
Yeah, he was in his 40s, I believe.
40s in 93. So yeah. It was like, when you say a long history, it says a long history of drug abuse. So that means if he was doing drugs since a teenager, you're talking he was doing, you know, amphetamines, but he was probably doing a couple of other different drugs since it was, you know, the 60s.
Right.
So it ties more in why didn't they discuss some of those other pieces into this.
Mm.
Because it's just not amphetamines, but if he, you know, did any of the other ones, psychedelics.
Well, don't forget, when you are going to trial, it's like I said on the civil side, you know, you have, during the pleading stage, you know, you got to respond to the answer, and the answer is yes or no. So there could be other things that were not included in the facts that were presented by the court that maybe went to those, but they were not in dispute. These are all the issues that were potentially in dispute.
And this is going to be silly. Amphetamines are which type of drug?
Pills.
They're the pills, so they're not like LSD or acid?
No,
or anything.
No, they're... I never did drugs, so I don't know all the street names.
That's why I was asking the question.
I think there were like... Blue Meanies, Quaaludes, things like that, yeah.
This is like sidetracked, because I was just thinking, so if he could claim that he was not on drugs, but wouldn't they then evaluate him to make sure that he was not on drugs at the time? And if he was, could he also be, like, could that also be an added charge to the case itself?
Oh, yeah, if he was operating under the influence. Yeah, absolutely, that could have been added. But it wasn't part of the facts, so I'm assuming it wasn't. All right. So we got something that's really, really, really complex. And again, I threw this in because I thought it'd be fair. Okay, why did it end up on an appeal? Well, this is why. Well, what the court ended up deciding was twofold. The defense argument before the court was that he should be viewed as being insane. The reason being, he suffers from ADD, which was a recognized psychotic illness. So the defense is saying, look, the fact that we can prove that he had been taking drugs is enough to establish the McNaughton rule of defense. If that was accepted, then you have no mens rea, which means you cannot be convicted for the crime. The prosecution argued the fact that he did drugs throughout his own life is not relevant here. Because who in the United States, even going back to the 60s and 70s, I was alive then, right? Everybody knew drugs were bad. They've known drugs were bad going back to the 40s. Although, did you know back in like the 19th century, you know what one of the primary ingredients of Coca-Cola was?
Cocaine.
Cocaine.
But by the 1960s, 70s, 80s, there was enough studies that were out there that there's nobody that could use an excuse. Well, I didn't know. So the prosecution saying, no, the fact that he got an illness as a reaction of that intentional act of taking drugs, not enough to establish a defense. Ultimately, the court decided against the defendant. The court sided with the prosecution. Why? If you are struggling, what can you easily do?
Find help.
By the way, speaking to someone who has a very bad alcoholic in their family, you can't force the person to help themselves. And the sad thing is the more you try forcing them, the more they're going to resist and the more they're going to relapse. And the saddest part is if you have someone like that, if they can't figure it out, you hope that when they do get in that accident, they don't kill anybody else.
Unlike this guy. He ended up going to jail for life. Questions? All right. Last little bit of criminal stuff I have for you is the criminal process.
So we did the civil process. That was on the first exam. I'm not going to necessarily ask you again what the criminal process is, but I just want to get this in your head, because like the stuff that we covered for the first exam, you're not going to see it again on the second exam, but that doesn't mean you can forget it, because in order to make sense of as we proceed, you need to remember all that stuff as much as you can.
So, obviously, the criminal process begins when? No. Way before you even get convicted.
Begin just like a civil suit. The civil suit begins when defendant did something to plaintiff. Criminal case begins the moment the alleged criminal, a.k.a. the defendant, did something that was illegal. They are arrested. And by the way, I did talk about that on the video. Fourth Amendment, yeah? Fourth Amendment. What's the constitutional requirement that the government must adhere to as a result of the Fourth Amendment?
They get to see, like, a judge before.
Not quite yet, but a judge might be involved.
Search and seizures.
Search and seizures. What does that involve?
A warrant.
The process begins when the police believe someone committed a crime. They go before a neutral magistrate, a judge. They present evidence of probable cause. Tim did X. Tim sold drugs in a warehouse. The judge then reviews the evidence they have and issues a warrant. Search warrant. And an arrest warrant. Person gets arrested. What happens at the point of arrest?
His rights are reminded.
Exactly. He's reminded, or she is reminded, of their constitutional rights. Which are what? Right. What happens when you are Mirandized?
The right to remain silent.
Why are you going to keep your mouth shut?
Because it can be held against you.
Anything you say can and will be used against you in the court of law. What else do you get?
You have the right to an attorney.
Why do you want to get an attorney? They probably know the law more than you do. And lastly?
If you can't afford it, they'll be appointed.
Yeah, if you can't afford one, you'll get a court-appointed judge. All right, so that way, lawyer. All right. So now the person's arrested. They are Mirandized, all right? And they get taken to the police station. The next step is, as you said, you're going to get indicted. Which, if it's a significant crime, means on the next possible business day, you are going to be put in the back of a police car and you're going to be driven to a court. And you're going to go through an indictment. An indictment is where the judge reviews the alleged crimes that they use to get the warrants. The judge is also going to review the evidence that the police had to justify the warrants. And at that point, the judge is going to make a determination. Is there enough evidence that a jury may be able to convict you of what is alleged? Again, if it's on it, because the judge isn't making a decision whether you are guilty or not. The judge is just making the determination as if the police had enough evidence to justify the arrest. So, for instance, if you get arrested for breaking into Walmart, but you were actually down in Florida for the entire week that the break-in happened, where the heck did the police get the evidence to say you broke into Walmart? Because all you got to do is show, I wasn't even here. Talk about an ultimate alibi. Well, the reason why we have that in our system is because not too long ago, when the Crown didn't like you, they would send out the king's men, they'd lock you up in chains and throw you away in a dungeon somewhere, and forget about you, where you would die. Well, our English forefathers didn't think that was a good idea. So, you know, as a result of a series of developments in English common law, it got to the point where you had this indictment process. Because if the judge doesn't believe the evidence that the police have, guess what they're going to do? Yeah, there is no case. It's dropped. You walk free. But this also provides the judge an opportunity. Okay, maybe this person is a violent felon that has a record that's longer than my arm. Well, maybe that's not someone we want to allow go out on the street. Or maybe they're a flight risk. You know, maybe they're accused of battering, you know, their wife. Are you going to let a wife beater go back in the house with the wife? No. You're going to take some type of remedial action. But ultimately, the biggest thing that comes out of the indictment is when the judge decides there is going to be a trial. All right, well, what happens if it's a major crime? A white-collar crime, embezzlement. These aren't the type of crimes like a murder where the police can come in and get you. If you are accused of a major crime, it won't be a judge making the decision. It will be a panel of citizens that gather together in what's called a grand jury. Any of you ever served on a grand jury before? In Massachusetts, if you get that jury duty card and it says you're potentially going to serve on a grand jury, you are on call for 3 months. Because what you will do is you will then be called in, and then the prosecution can present the evidence of the criminal action. And if 12 out of the 16 members of the grand jury felt that there's enough to justify the arrest, then the trial will continue. Same thing is as if you go before a judge, but these are major crimes. Major crimes. If you pay attention to politics, our government has been kind of out of control for the last few years, and our government, depending upon who's in charge, has been engaged in a lot of lawfare. They're using the legal system to go after their political opponents. But whenever you hear that there's going to be a potential case against so-and-so, that decision was ultimately made by a grand jury. They decided there was enough evidence to proceed with a potential trial. All right.
So if indicted, that means you're officially charged. Arraignment, which I've said a couple of times, is the process in the step where everything begins. That's when the judge sets the time and the date when the trial's going to commence. Because that means you're moving forward. There is enough probable cause to establish the potentiality of a crime. We've determined it's the right defendant. So let's move forward. The arraignment, post-arraignment stage, rather, is similar to the pleading stage in a civil trial. That's when all of the charges are worked out. Maybe you heard the phrase plea bargaining. That all takes place during the arraignment stage. But then, like a civil trial, once you know what the trial is all about, then you start gathering evidence. You use interrogatories, you use depositions, you use actual physical pieces of evidence, you use witness testimony. All the stuff is the same. Plea bargaining can continue through the discovery stage. It's kind of like on a civil trial. Remember I mentioned you can settle at any time, all the way up to the point when the jury makes a decision. It's the same thing with plea bargaining. Because as discovery is going on, maybe one side or the other realizes, oh, I don't have enough evidence. You know, I'm trying to get them for murder one, but it doesn't actually appear that we have any witnesses of the physical act. So, you know, and plus, he was really mad because he got fired and he was struggling. So he was in the car and he was really enraged. He wasn't quite thinking straight. So we might not be able to get him for vehicular homicide, but maybe we could do a manslaughter. Something like that. It all depends on how much evidence they think they can gather. Because, believe it or not, under the criminal procedural rules, if the prosecution cannot establish enough evidence to go forward with charges, by default, they have to drop the charges. Oh, do I want to give you the sickest story that I've ever experienced? Sure, why not? I have a buddy, longtime criminal defense attorney. And he got tasked with defending an alleged shooter in a gangbanger incident a few years ago in Boston. Well, he had this client. He, in his heart of hearts, believed, yeah, he actually did it. He was kind of a scummy guy, but, you know, if you're an attorney, you cannot make that ethic determination. And by the way, that's the reason why I decided to go in the area that I did. Because I am a person of principle and I am a person of morality. And if I think you committed a crime, I can't defend you. But he has that ability. So he's working on it. And he realizes the police are getting close. But there's only one piece that's missing. In order to shoot somebody, what must there be? No.
A gun.
If you're going to be accused of shooting somebody, the police have to produce a weapon. Because if they can't produce a weapon that's linked to you, how can they prove you pulled the trigger? Cops were stumbling. The cops were trying and nothing. They had three casings, but no gun. Well, they go into the arraignment, and the judge determines that he is a flight risk. So he orders him to remain in state custody until the time of his trial. Later that night, the perp's wife shows up at my buddy's office with a Christmas present, all wrapped up. And the wife tells my buddy, we'll say his name was Joe, the criminal, asked if you could just hold on to this. It's a really valuable present that he wanted to give to his kids, because he had kids with another woman. But he's afraid that when the police start coming and searching his house, that they will rip it open and possibly break it. It's a family heirloom.
My buddy, being the lawyer, said fine. Locked it up into the safe. They get to trial. Guess what the police don't produce? So he was acquitted.
It's sitting in the lawyer's office, isn't it?
Don't know. All my buddy knew was that there was a wrapped Christmas present. Which, because, yes, lawyer-client confidentiality, we're supposed to keep anything that a client tells us, because that's privileged information. But that doesn't give us the right to open up other people's packages. But I'll tell you this much. When AKA Joe was released and out on the street, he did go back to my buddy's office, collected the present for his kid, and he said, thanks, buddy, appreciate it. All right. Like with a civil proceeding, it's all about the plaintiff's case. In a criminal case, it's all about the prosecution's case. The prosecution is the state. It is typically spearheaded, if it's a major crime, by the district attorney. And in Massachusetts, we elect our district attorneys. Or it's handled by one of the assistant district attorneys. Those are paid state employees. They are the ones that begin the trial. They are the ones that have to present evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. For every element of every crime that the defendant is being charged, they have to have enough evidence to show each of those elements. If they fall short, even if there's no other possibility, the defendant is going to be acquitted. So how is it done? Simple. Prosecution is going to do everything in their power to essentially establish that the defendant is the reincarnation of Hitler, and that there's no one else other than this person, out of all of the billions of people who live on Earth, could have committed this crime other than this person. They will bring in witnesses. They will also bring in other witnesses who potentially saw the act. They'll bring in witnesses of people who knew the person back in third grade. Back when he was in third grade, he used to light cats on fire. Anything they can. Because you have those 12 men or women sitting in that jury box, and they are listening to every word that's said. If the jury believes it could not have happened in any other way, even if God himself came down on earth and enacted a miracle, beyond a reasonable doubt, then they have to vote to convict. But wherever the prosecution stumbles, that provides an opening for the defense. Talked about it already, and I'm going to mention it again. O.J. Simpson. Love don't fit, you must acquit. The moment those jurors and everybody else watching at home, it was one of the most televised TV programs throughout the entire 90s. Everybody and their grandmothers was watching the O.J. Simpson trial on TV. The moment O.J. is sitting there at the table with his big swollen fingers, because his attorneys told him, don't take your arthritis medicine anymore. And then they put the latex glove, because you can't contaminate the evidence. And then give him that canned, custom-made leather Isotona glove. And try putting it on your hand. If the glove don't fit, you must acquit. The murderer was wearing the gloves. They could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that O.J. Simpson could actually get him onto his hands. Thus, he walked.
Questions?
All right. I'm good. On... what do I see next? Wednesday. Thank you. On Wednesday, what I'd like to do is I would like to do the homework that I talked about in the bystanders. So we'll do that. And also, I'm going to give you a quiz. Out of fairness, I'll get, no, actually, because half the class isn't here. Did you all watch the criminal, the first part of the criminal stuff on the video?
Yeah.
All right, well, so you already got the notes. If you didn't, you got time to go back and rewatch it. I will ask you a quiz, I'll give you a quiz on something that I covered on that first half, all right? Yes.
So assignment number two.
Assignment number
two,
yes. All of you should have had it done because I did ask for it today, but if you didn't, obviously you have time. Three cases that involves bystander's rule. All right, any other questions? Oh, one last thing, so a couple of you came in late. If you did not take the quiz that I asked you to do on Friday, I will send out a reminder at some point, and I'll give you another chance to do it.
So we have to find three cases that...
It's on my homework. It's on the homework section.
Okay.
On my website.
Okay.
It's assignment number two. Okay? Enjoy the spring. Because apparently it's going away over the weekend, but at least we get a couple of days of warmth.